What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I never had to ask for help before, so I just did not know how, and I was afraid to do it. I thought if I went and asked for help that I would be disappointing people around me or thinking that that it was, like I said, a fear of failure.
Hey everybody, and welcome to RealPod. I'm Victoria Garrick, former D1 athlete and mental health and body image advocate. Every Wednesday, I'll be bringing you awesome guests, weekly inspiration, and the realest conversations around everything and anything. Now let's get real. Welcome back to RealPod. You guys, we have such a fun guest today. I cannot even believe it. I'm so excited. From Chicks in the Office, which I'm sure all of you are familiar with. They have millions of listeners on SiriusXM Radio. From Barstool, we have joining us today the one and only Francesca Mariano, more popularly known probably as Barstool Fran or Fran or Fran paired along with Rhea, the Chicks in the Office that everyone knows and loves. But I'm so excited because this is such a special, fun conversation, not only because Fran is currently one of the realest people in pop culture these days, but she opens up about what her journey has been like getting to work at Barstool Sports, one of the most popular sports media companies currently. And also she shares a bit about her journey and the ups and downs she's had and she's struggled with, which is something she said she's never opened up about before. So I'm really grateful that she trusted us. Once again, we love mental health conversations here. So I'm really grateful for that. And I can't wait for you guys to hear this side of Fran that you probably haven't heard of before. And also, of course, we will get into Kardashians, plastic surgery, pop culture, and how to stay sane and full of self-love within all of that madness on social media that can be so enticing. So this is just a fun episode. I'm so excited for you guys to listen to this. And let's get started with one of the members of Chicks in the Office, the legend herself, Fran Mariano. Okay, we are live. We are live with a chick in the office. Just one singular is here with us today, but I'm so excited. So thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. I feel like this has been a long time coming. I've been wanting to do your show for a while, so I'm glad that we made this work.
Oh, you flatter me. If anything, I was like, I have to wait till I've earned my stripes to even ask her.
Oh, no, no, no.
But I'm so glad to have you on. So how have you been? What's your everyday like? I know you guys are keep putting out content. Have you felt like it's kind of been like almost ramped up way more for you guys given quarantine?
Yeah, so it's been really crazy. I would say that there is definitely part of it where you feel like you need to be doing more than you normally are doing just because you're not in the office, people aren't watching you, nobody's seeing you. So you want to make sure you're putting out a lot of content. I think everybody, I would say, at Barstool has really felt that way, just to make sure that there's stuff for people to watch and consume and listen to.
Right.
And it's been great for us. Thankfully, Rhea and I have been able to do our show from home. I have not seen her in months, which is crazy.
Do you have like withdrawals?
Oh yeah, it's been insane. And I've actually been at my boyfriend's house, so I've been with his family. I haven't seen my family in months because my parents are in Florida. So
I was gonna say, is that your bedding? I'm here for it.
Though. Yeah, no, right? Like, no, I'm literally in his mom's granddaughter's room. Like when they come to stay, this is the room they stay in. So it's like the little girl's room, but it's super cute. And yeah, so like I said, like I haven't seen my parents. I haven't seen my friends. So it's been tough. It's been tough from a social aspect and from a, you know, working aspect, because part of what makes, I think, Rhea and I so great is we have a good back and forth. So having to do that over, you know, the computer is tough.
Right. And also when things are so out of whack, it's probably harder to come in and like really be present talking about something newsworthy when you just want to see your family or like you feel claustrophobic. Have you tried to find a way that you could go visit them, or are you waiting till things are much more clear?
So I haven't wanted to travel to Florida because I haven't felt comfortable flying. And so I'm waiting for them to come back, because they will eventually come home. Like my home is still technically New Jersey is, you know, home base. So hopefully in the next few weeks or so, they drove down to Florida in, you know, January and have been there for all of this. So once they decide to pack up the car and take the dogs and head home, then I'll be able to go see them, thankfully, because I miss my dogs a lot too.
Oh, I know. They're so cute. I see them on your Instagram.
I'm obsessed. And this is like the longest I've gone without seeing them ever. So I'm dying.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it's tough too, because I totally feel you on the grind of, do I put out a ton of content now because I have literally nothing else to do? But also I haven't had a day to just do nothing like I think most people are. So there's so much back and forth. I do want to talk to you about how you got your start at Barstool, because it's such a unique story. And I was a broadcast journalism major, and I know you were too, and worked all the internships, and how you fell into your role is so awesome and also well-deserved. So I would love to talk about how you even started interning at Barstool and where you heard about it.
Yeah. So I was a fan for a long time. I am a diehard Philadelphia sports fan. Just my family were absolutely crazy. And so I loved following their Philadelphia stuff. Smitty is our main Philadelphia blogger, and he put out a tweet, I would say January-ish of 2017. And basically said, you know, Barstool had just moved into their full-time New York office over the last few months there. Everybody had normally been at home, now working from home or different locations. Now everybody's in this one New York headquarters. And he had said, I'm looking for an intern who can actually be in the New York office and come in and whatnot. And so, you know, he posted his email address, send me your resume, send me this. And I went back and forth about it a lot, because I didn't know what the environment would be like. Like, I loved consuming the content and I loved everything that they were doing, but I wasn't sure, like, is that where I want to be? Is this like what I want to do?
You almost thought like, is there a place for me there?
Yes. Because, and at the time it was mostly dudes. Like there was no, like there was really no other girls. The only other girl was Rhea. So, and our CEO, Erica. So I was hesitant about it, but you know, I had a conversation with my mom and she was like, you love talking about sports. This is a dream opportunity. Why not try it? See what happens and go from there. And I was like, all right, okay, I'll send the email. So I sent an email with my resume and everything, and Smitty had replied to me being like, thanks for sending a resume. You're one of the only people to actually do that. And, it's funny now because Barstool was so different even just then applying now is so insane and so formal.
I bet there's like a whole portal you go through.
Exactly. So now when I look back at it, I'm like, this story is so ridiculous because it's just impossible would not happen now. So he said, hey, can you whatever come in? I'm doing this new morning show. Can you come in, help out, whatever, 9 a.m. And so I go in, I'm the only one. He's like, well, I told you and like four other guys to come at the same time. You're the only one here on time. So I was the only one who showed up on time. He basically was like, sit in on our morning show, see what you think. I'll talk to you afterwards and see what you can do and your skill level and whatnot. So we have that meeting, we sit down, and he basically was like, okay, you're hired. And I didn't leave for the rest of the day. It was like I started work already. It was like, you're hired, now you're here. And I met everyone, met Rhea, met, you know, everybody in the office. And things just kind of took off from there.
Tell me about the first time you laid eyes on Rhea. I'm sure this, like, we need to know, was it, I like this girl, we're friends at first sight? Because I know when you get an internship and you see someone else your age, you're like, you're going to be my only person here.
Totally. And, well, it was scary because she, being the only girl, like, and being with a bunch of guys, they were like, ooh, Rhea, like, there's another girl coming. What do you think? Like, thinking Rhea was going to get very territorial. And they thought the two of us would not get along. So, you know, the first day of me being there just on Barstool Radio, which is, we have a full serious channel now, but when I started, it was just one show a day for a couple hours. And I was brought on for them to be like, oh, there's a new girl intern. Is she going to get along with Rhea? Is she not? Is there going to be problems? Trying to see if there was going to be friction.
So classic. And, like, two girls, like, they've got to hate each other.
They have
to hate each other. One's a blonde, one's a brunette. It's in a movie.
Yep. And so I went in being like, I love everything that Rhea is doing. I think this is great. Like, I'm not going to say anything bad. She's not going to say anything bad. And they were like, oh, okay. So, like, you guys are going to be friends. And we were like, yeah, we hope. Like, we're going to try and make it work. And we definitely tiptoed around each other at the beginning just because I wasn't sure if she was happy that I was there or not or whatever. And she actually was the one who made the first move and had, like, DM'd me on Twitter because we didn't had an exchange phone numbers yet. And she had DM'd me on Twitter, I would say, like, maybe a weekend, like, not a pretty right away, and was like, I really think we could do some great stuff together. You know, we got the blonde brunette dynamic. Like, maybe we can do videos or something. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. She wants to do stuff with me. We can figure this out. So once that happened, like, the wall was broken and we realized we loved all the same things and loved gossiping about celebrities and pop culture. And we were like, oh, this is great.
Aside from that initial DM, what conversation or moment did you, like, realize we're friends? Like, we have something here.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, there is something when you walk into that internship or job or whatever, and there's really only one other person that's around your age or is another girl or another boy, whatever it is. So right away there was that connection where, like, oh, you want to go get lunch? So, like, we would go get lunch at the same time. We would just go talk. And then I would say that it was really only a matter of a few weeks before we were texting every day and communicating every day, because it's such a fun place to work. And there's so much going on that you always, like, and there's always something going on. So you want to talk to someone about it. So even on
you need
the days
buddy.
That we weren't. Yes. Even
or
on
you
the
can
days
be like
we weren't
off
there.
The record, do you think this person's weird too?
Right. Like, even, you know, those days when we weren't there, I mean, that never happened. We literally were there every day. But when we would go home and we would see something on Twitter and we'd text each other like, oh my God, did you see so-and-so's tweet? Like, what's going on? Like, what are they doing? So it was pretty instantaneous, honestly. And all, like, the first time we got in front of a camera, it was hilarious. And we were like, okay, this is gonna be this is going to be good.
When that first moment happened in front of the camera, where you guys started realizing that they were letting you do more stuff with the content and kind of create your own voices, was a bell going off in your head like, okay, this is my ticket? Like, how do we plot this out and map this to success? Or was it, okay, I'll just roll with the punches?
Honestly, we had no idea what we were doing. And so we were like, okay, let's do this. We had no idea what was going to happen. There was no like mastermind plot of turning this into a giant show or doing something else. It was the other guys in the office encouraging us. Honestly, all those guys are amazing.
Which is so cool.
They're fantastic. Like Kevin Clancy, who does KFC Radio, he goes by KFC, and his brother Brendan produces his show. They asked Rhea and I, like, we answer voicemails. That's a segment for their show, and they're always outrageous and very funny. It would be hilarious if we got the female perspective on it instead of just John and Kevin's perspective, and we'll see how different they are.
Awareness, social awareness. Yes. We love it.
And we were like, that, okay, great. That's perfect. We'll do that. And that was really the first thing we did in front of the camera. Kevin and Brendan like really, really encouraged us, and they set it all up for us, and they put us in we used to film our videos in the merch room in our old office. So we sat down at the table and we did, you know, 1 minute short videos, truly with the help of, okay, this will be fun. And also because we had a guy who's been around for a while. Brendan was very familiar with social media and, you know, what hasn't been done and what could be done. And he saw an opening for really short form Instagram videos. It's kind of when Instagram first went to the, you can post a full 1 minute on Instagram.
Right.
And they thought, this is perfect. Let's have you guys do just 1 minute quick clips and start this Instagram. And the first one was like emojis, translating emojis and what do they mean between, you know, if you're texting back and forth, girl and a boy, what does this emoji mean? What does this emoji mean? And it was very standard until we got to the end, and there's like a baby crawling emoji. It's kind of like it's on the ground. If you haven't seen it before, you would never know because no one would use that emoji.
I need to find it.
We were asked what it was, and Rhea was like, oh, that's like, you know, come and get it. Like, it looks like a person crawling on the floor. Like, and I was like, are you nuts? I'm like, that's a baby.
That's a fetus.
Like, she was like, oh my God. Like people have sent that to me as like a let's like hook up kind of situation. And it was so funny. It was so absurd. And right away, like people would watch it. They were like, oh, this is funny. This could be really good. And thankfully all the other guys in the office were really helpful. And we were able to start the, Chicks in the Office Instagram account on our own. So it was, and like you said, we did not, like, they were like, all right, let's put this on Instagram. We're like, okay, here's the Instagram. There was no plotting. There was no planning. It was like, let's put up these videos. Let's see how they do. And if we get to a certain amount of videos and followers and whatnot, we'll take it to Dave Portnoy, our boss, and see what he thinks, and maybe we'll do something with it.
But it's cool that you were able to already start branding as like this kind of like branch of Barstool without Dave kind of needing to guide that, which is awesome. And so then when did you realize, wow, like we're a thing. We are Chicks in the Office.
So we started the Instagram, and I would say it became pretty popular quickly. And I would say the first time we were like, oh boy, this is going to be something is, you know, we had been working hard at it, just the two of us, which is one of the great things that Barstool has allowed us to do. If you have an idea, you can execute it. If it's bad, somebody's going to tell you it's bad. And if it's good, someone's going to tell you it's good. So we worked on our Instagram. Rhea took it to Dave one day and said, this is what Fran and I have been working on. We think it's great. Watch a few, see what you think. You know, we have 10,000 followers.
This point, what year are you at college?
So at this point I was I can't even tell you because I the years started to blend. At that point, I had about a year or so left.
Okay.
Of school. So at that point, like, I was still going to school. I was spending a majority of my time at Barstool. And then once we got that Instagram up and running, and Dave was like, this is great. We're going to post this on the Barstool main social, every day. It'll go up on the blog, on Twitter, on Facebook, everything, was kind of when we realized this is something that could be huge, because now a lot of eyeballs are going to see it. And we had a few videos go viral on Twitter. And that was a big moment. And then we were hired as full-time employees later that year, 28, you know, everything blends together at the end of that year, I believe. And we were basically told, like, we think you guys are great. We think you have something really special. If you're willing to, you can be full-time employees. But just know with that, you know, you can no longer go to school. And on top of that, we were, I think this was 2017. On top of that, we were almost cast on The Amazing Race.
Oh my gosh.
Which is like a bizarre side story, but we got noticed through our Instagram. And we were still interns. And at that point, we didn't know, like, we thought we were possibly going to be on this show. And if that was the case, we'd be gone for 6 weeks or so. And so obviously we would not be able to go back to school. So in that, it was right before the fall, and we had said, all right, we just got to make a decision. Like, are we going to go back to school or are we not?
Well, and it's like your life is kind of unfolding before your eyes, like in the way that you had wanted it to. So it's tough to just say, I'm going to close the door and hope it opens in a year.
Totally. And, you know, I had that conversation with my parents because my college journey was very different. It was had a lot of ups and downs. And
like, did you transfer or was
yeah,
it?
Yeah. I mean, I started at brief summary. I started at Georgetown. I went there for a year and a half. I ended up leaving due to poor performance, poor mental health. I was in a really bad place mentally, and I think a lot of it had to do with just not really being prepared for the environment, and then not personally being willing to seek help. Like, I shut down. I thought I'd always done so well in school. I never had a problem. Why can't I figure it out now? And I never asked for the help that I needed to until it was really too late. And I came home. I worked for a little bit. I didn't immediately go to a new school. And then eventually the door was open for me to go back to Georgetown. We had set up a plan because I had eventually spoken with counseling at school, and they had said, you know, if you take some classes and you know, see a therapist and whatnot, and we'll figure this out. And if you do want to come back and meet the requirements to come back, we can discuss that. So I ended up taking other classes at different schools, Rutgers, Seton Hall. Like, I popped around, because then at that point I was like, do I even want to go back? I don't really think that I do.
Well, because sometimes it's triggering. It's like, I've maybe developed coping mechanisms and I feel better, but right when I go back into this environment, is it all going to sink again?
Totally. And I made my best friends there. Still to this day are all my friends from Georgetown, but they didn't have the program that I wanted. Like, I wanted to be doing journalism and broadcast journalism. And, you know, they have extra, you know, TV station, radio, stuff like that, but no actual journalism school, communication school, nothing like that. So I was like, what if I went to a school that has something like that? I went, took a bunch of different classes at different schools, and finally came to the point where I said, I want to be in Manhattan. I want to be close to home, because I'm a little bit of a homebody. And I So I thought, all right, this is what I'm going to do. Apply to schools in Manhattan. I applied to a bunch, ended up really liking Marymount Manhattan College, which is where I was going before I stopped. And they were great, really hands-on, small classes, small school, super small school. And that's kind of what I needed. And they had, you know, a good journalism program, and I could do these broadcast classes and everything that I really wanted to do. And so while I was in school doing these things that I was now hands-on learning to do for myself at work, that's when I had that conversation with my parents being like, look, this opportunity I'm getting right now is what I want to do once I finish school. If I give this up right now, I don't think it will be there when I finish. And I'm learning all the things, I'm doing it right now here, and now they're gonna pay me.
Yeah.
Like, instead of me paying to go to this school. And they were like, okay, if this is really what you want to do, all right, okay, that's okay.
It's wild because, and I don't want to make assumptions, but obviously Georgetown is so academic, so smart. I'm sure out of high school, it's like, oh my gosh, Fran is going to Georgetown. And then it's like, fast forward a few years and it's not everything you expected. You're really struggling. And then you're taking this completely different path. How long did it take you to sort of talk these things through in counseling and get back to a place where you start to feel really good again?
It was about a year or so. Like, I left. So I went 4 years and had no complications, I would have been the class of 2016. So leaving high school in 2012, it wasn't until about, I would say, 2015, 2016, that I started to feel more confident, felt like maybe I could go back to school, wanted to go back to school, wanted to do something, because the fear of failure was pretty crippling for me during those times that I was home. So I was really afraid to go back or do anything. And I was afraid of disappointing people.
Yeah.
I'm the oldest person and grandkid in my family. Like, I was the first grandkid on both sides. I'm the oldest cousin. You know, obviously that means the same thing, but so I was the first one, you know, to go to college. Each of my parents have three siblings, so pretty, you know, big family. And I was the first one to go, and everyone, like you said, everyone's so excited.
The
they're
stakes
like, yes,
are
this
high.
Is amazing. Yeah. Both my parents are Georgetown grads. So,
oh, wow. Let's pile on the pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was a lot of pressure. And, you know, and my loved ones around me, they didn't even realize that they were doing it until they were like, oh, wow. So clearly things are not going well. But yeah, it definitely took me a full year before I was like comfortable to put myself out there again.
And you mentioned that you should have gotten help earlier and you didn't. What do you think kept you from doing that? Did it feel like failure to have to ask someone, hey, I don't know the answer, like I can't figure this out? What was it that kept you from wanting to seek the help?
It was more of just like, why can't I figure this out on my own? Like, I've never had these problems before. I've always done well in school. I've always had my good group of friends. Like, why is meeting people hard? Why is, I was chasing the ideal, perfect picture college dream where everyone's, you know, you're seeing it's freshman year and all your friends are posting how happy they are. And you're sitting in your room, like, how come everybody else from my high school is happy and I'm not? Why? Like, which is, you know, also why social media is so dangerous.
I relate so hard.
Yeah. And you're like, so why is this, like, why am I not having this perfect experience? And I've never had I never had to ask for help before, so I just did not know how, and I was afraid to do it. I thought if I went and asked for help that I would be disappointing people around me, or thinking that that it was, like I said, a fear of failure. Like, that's like throwing in the towel, like, oh, I can't do this myself now. Right. I need this situation. But it's one of the best things I've learned. I'm a big advocate for therapy, speaking with somebody. And whenever any of my friends have any issues, or people at work are dealing with problems, you know, being in the spotlight and having a lot of eyeballs on you, it's the best thing. Like, sometimes you just need to cry to someone who is going to listen for an hour and
actually give you good feedback and not be biased. And I'm so glad that like now that's your take on it. And I'm such a advocate as well. I feel like everybody is going to go through something that's tough and challenging. So why would you not want someone who's literally a professional whose career is to give the best advice and help you to help you? So that's such a cool part of your journey that I didn't know.
Yeah. It's really not something that I publicly talk about too much, just because the show that I do is personal. Like, I talk about my life, but not to a very intense extent. But I have spoken, you know, my friends, my family, my boyfriend, everybody knows this story. Rhea, obviously. Rhea and I bonded a lot because we went through similar college stories. Like, she ended up at a school that wasn't great for her, came home, transferred to a new school in Manhattan, and then started interning at Barstool. Like, we had that bond between us as well, being like, wow, like, college was tough for you too, like, great. So it's important, and I like sharing this because I also think it is a great way for people to see, like, if that college situation does not work out the way that you think it's going to when you start, it is not the end of the world. You may think it is the end of the world, but the possibilities are endless. Like, if you told the 19-year-old Fran, who was like so upset about her life, like where she would be at 25, she would not have believed it. So it's crazy, but you have to remember that, like, you know, you got to keep pushing on.
It's so important. I totally agree. You see all of these high school kids who just think you spend 4 years, like, the conversation is, where are you applying, where are you going, and then once you get in, is it good enough? You got to tell your family, friends, you got to post about it, the acceptance videos, and then you get there and you're like, this is everything I wanted, and I'm the most unhappy I've ever been. And like, that was my experience. And it's important for people to know, because there's so much pressure to be happy and to be loving life. And, you know, I want to ask, with what you're doing now for work, it's a lot of shows, it's a lot of talking, it's a lot of being on. How are you different on camera and on the podcast as Fran versus real life Fran?
Right. So I like to think that they're two pretty similar people, because I think that if you're not authentic on a podcast, people pick up on it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I like to think that they're pretty similar. Obviously, there is, when you're on camera or recording or whatever, you're on, like, I am happy, I am chatty, I am making sure that I have a lot to say. And there are times when off camera, Fran just doesn't want to do anything. Like, and it's funny because I talk so much that sometimes at night or whatever, like, all I want to do is sit in silence.
You're just mute.
Yeah, and watch TV and do nothing. Yes, yes. But
do you even feel like watching TV feels like work? It's like, you can't even like binge on a reality show because you're like, I gotta be taking tabs right now.
I know. It is, but I love it so much. Like, if I wasn't binging a reality show and then talking about it on my podcast. I'd be binging the reality show and texting like six of my friends about the show and like making them all watch so that we could all talk about it. And the podcast is just a way for me to do that on a larger scale and have people discuss these things with me. And that's why, I mean, I love it so much, or else I would not be able to do it, because, you know, if you're going to live tweet The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise year after year, you got to love the show. And I do.
I also think it's great that you mentioned how like there are going to be days where maybe you're not feeling 100% talkative, 100% on, because I am obviously preparing for this, was totally stalking like all the Chicks in the Office highlight reels. And I'm sitting there watching this video just like, this is a dream job. Like what they get to do, it's just to interview these stars and be on the fashion and all of this. I'm like, it's a dream job. But that's the highlight reel legitimately of the year, of the job. But there's all the grunt work that you're doing to be up with the news, prepare the skits, be lively on camera. So what do you think that says about everyone kind of thinking that there's some end game that's going to be easy and pure, but really no matter what you do in life, there's always going to be the side of it that is hard and takes work?
Yeah. The grunt work is always there, especially for the people that it seems like have the ideal job or the ideal life, social media, the whole thing. There's always a lot of work that goes into it. I think we've been able to show that pretty well. And it's hard because you, like you said, you have to be on when you're doing your show and doing it. But there are days where me or Rhea or whatever are like, oh, like this is just the last thing we want to do. Like, and you know, we've been up doing this or we've been preparing for this, and we kind of have to like
on at home or you're doing whatnot. You're human.
Exactly. Which is why having a partner is amazing. I think I don't know if I would be able to do something like this if it was by myself. I give a lot of credit to you because
I'm like, just hits so deep.
No, like
I need someone.
Yeah. I give you so much credit because I really don't think I'd be able to do it by myself. Having a partner in it all is great because on the days when one of us is like not feeling great or a little bit down, the other one is there to give that quick little like slap in the face, like, let's go, like we gotta do this, it's gonna be great. And that's all we need to get to that next level. But you know, it's tough because also when you're doing a show like we do, or you know, are working for a place that like we work at, there are a lot of eyeballs on you. And so that's a whole nother aspect of it, is like, what do people think of me? Do people like me? Yeah. Are people following me? Are they not following me? Right. And that takes a toll on you know, what you think about yourself and how you see yourself. So having those, like, for people to understand that it's not just like, oh, you know, I'm laying in my bed and then I'm going to record my podcast and have carefree life and everything's so great, when, you know, it's impossible to do anything on the internet without getting hate from some corner of the world. So it's not all fantastic all the time.
How have you managed that? And obviously, like, it's the truth.
Yeah.
People sexualize Chicks in the Office, like Rhea and Fran, whatnot. Like, how do you stay grounded through whether it's those types of comments or negative comments, like these girls, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
How do you tune it out, or how do you deal with it?
It is hard because it's taken me a long time, I think, to really get a hold of it and not try and care less, because there are definitely times where I see something and it just like absolutely ruins my day. Like, it's just, you're like, why did I have to read that?
Right. No, it's like stays with you the whole day. Yeah.
And I just have to keep telling myself, like, there are so many people that love what we're doing and listen to us and relate to us and send us amazing messages that they love the show and they feel like, you know, they're best friends with us, which is how we want our show to be. And I have to remind myself of those when I see that one that's like, they're so boring or what, you know, whatever, or some ridiculous thing like, her clothes are awful. Like something so stupid that you're like, why do I care so much about this? But that's what people always say, right? They're like, you could get a billion good comments and the bad comment is the one that you harp on or reply to. And I've learned that it's best to ignore the hate, acknowledge the love, and make sure you have a good, like, real life support system around you. I'm very close to my family. My boyfriend is amazing. My best friends are amazing. Like, anytime that that includes Rhea, like, anytime that one of us is feeling down or is having a problem, we know that we can always come to each other. And on top of that, I have that with my friends too. Like, if I'm like, guys, I'm having a really shitty day, like, need a little Fran pump up because your girl's feeling down.
Well,
they're
rejection.
Like, we love you. You're amazing.
I love that. And I love that you have that group to go to because rejection can feel so heavy. It can feel so strong. And that most of the time is what convinces people to say, okay, I'm not good enough. I got to change. Or I got to do this better. I got to talk slower. I got to look better. And the thing I love about Chicks in the Office, which most people do, is you guys are literally the girl next door. Like, you represent the normal girl who is now in this world doing these cool things. And I see myself in you. So how have you managed to stay authentic and not go get the lip injections and not go ham on Facetune, like, and stay just really real?
One is my mom would kill me. That's number one. Like, she sees everything, and we're very close, and she just, so many of those things just don't fly. And she's my mom. Like, she's instilled all these beliefs in me that I have stayed strong with, thinking like, I don't need to change my face for people to like me. If it's going to make me like myself more or, you know, appease me, sure, go ahead. But if I'm doing it for the sole reason of like, oh, everybody says that I have this problem and I don't see it, but everybody else says it, then that's pointless.
Right.
But it's it's hard because you want to be that relatable person. And honestly, I think Rhea and I have done a good job because we still feel that same way, like talking about these celebrities or gossip or interviewing celebrities. Like, the fangirl inside of me that has been me since I was 10 years old, like, is still the same me. I haven't changed. And I also think a lot of that has to do with not being totally surrounded by it all the time. I go to work with very regular guys and very regular people. Like, no one's super dressed up. We're all pretty casual. And that's a huge difference. Like, if we were at some massive company and everybody was dressed to the nines and we were getting our hair and makeup done every day.
But you could easily request, I want a makeup and stylist in the mornings at 6 a.m. Like, you easily could, but you guys don't. And that's like the difference, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I would just rather have more sleep. Like, I just, I just don't care enough about that to have those moments because it's just not that important to me. Like, I love getting dressed up and going out and having fun, but like, I don't need to do that all the time.
I love that. And so it's been, you think, a lifelong kind of confidence, just kind of from your family and where you come from, that's kept you this way. Have you had thoughts of, oh, maybe I should get extensions, maybe I should this?
Oh, I mean, all the time. That's just so, like, that's Instagram. You see what all these people are doing to themselves, and you're like, wow, they look amazing. Is that something that I should be doing? I don't know. But it's tough. It's insane because, and you know, we just had this, Rhea and I just had this conversation with the Lady Gang They were on our show. And I know you have their book. I have it as well. They, in their book, Act Like a Lady, they, shameless plug, you're welcome, ladies.
Shout out, Kelsey.
They literally did a illustration of each of their faces. And they were like, we have lip filler here and Botox here and filler in our cheeks and this here and this. Like, they've been so open with the things that they've done. And I just think that that's the best way to go about it. I hate when people lie about the stuff that they do. Like, just tell me if you fixed your nose. No, like, just tell me.
Literally. And the fact that the Kardashians have never talked about their body plastic surgery just to this day, it frustrates me. And the only reason it frustrates me is because there are legitimately 15-year-old girls that think they can do that by working out and eating salad, and it can't be done. And so that's always but it's also like, I respect Kylie and Kim. Like, I think they've got a very smart business mindset. If I met them, I would be so nice.
But
in my head, I'm like, just admit the fact that your body is not real.
I know that Kylie is extremely frustrating because I respect her as a businesswoman and she's done some amazing things, but it's like for her not to admit that, but now you see all of her friends have like the same exact body as her.
Yeah,
they're going to the same doctor and literally asking for the Kylie Jenner. Like, it's between that, like her makeup artist Ariel has like the same body as her. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And but then you have people like Nikita Dragon. I don't know if you know who she is, but
I do. And
yes. She is very open with like the fact that she has gotten surgery and, you know, has gotten the ass and the waist and everything like that. That has got and if you look at her body, it's basically what Kylie's is. So it's like, okay, she got a good recommendation.
Right.
And so you just kind of, I don't know, you just kind of wish that those people would discuss those things.
It's like, you have to, but it's like, part of me is livid. Obviously the person who thinks about the young girls who believe it. The other part of me is sad. I mean, just to change yourself so much and then not even talk about it because you want people to believe it as you. I mean, that's sad.
Right. And it's hiding yourself.
Yeah. But I could imagine like, and it's weird because similar to you, like I feel like I had a switch flip with my family and I definitely was on a track to for sure want like lip filler and for sure want some stuff done. The fake eyelashes, I could have seen that easily happening for me if I didn't have my big slap come to Jesus moment as a freshman in college. But it's funny because my friends and I will always joke, like you were just talking about, like we'll be like, I wonder what would be possible for me if so-and-so did my makeup and my hair. Like, what could happen? Because I don't know how to contour. I don't know how to cut crease.
It's really like, you know, what everyone says now. It's like, you're not ugly, you're just poor. Like, it's just.
I love that. That's so true.
Yeah. Like, if you want to dish out all the money for it, then you too can look like them.
I know. Yeah. You're not ugly. You're just poor for anyone listening. And with all these big time celebrities coming in that you're working with, is it just surreal? I mean, obviously you're a huge Show Bros fan, but people say don't meet your idols, you know, but you day in day are meeting these people. Are they normal? Are they kind of artsy? I mean, it's so interesting to me that someone who obviously like you and Rhea, who are so normal, have an hour conversation with someone who we view as like, you can't be normal just based on who you are.
It's so true. Thankfully, we have only really had a majority of amazing experiences. You know, they do say never meet your idol. Thankfully, the people that I have looked up to that we have met have been nothing but amazing. And they're so sweet and they're so gracious with their time. And always just like, whether it was in the office or now we're doing all these via Zoom, like it's still a great experience. You know, like with the Jonas Brothers, it's just like a group of guys I've loved since I was little. And you dream about having that conversation with them. And
we dream.
That whole day is still so surreal to me. I actually had that thought this morning in the bathroom getting ready because the Jonas Brothers just appeared on Foreplay with Barstool Golf Podcast because they love golf. And I don't even know. I think it was because I was listening to their new song as I was getting ready. And then my brain went to, oh, they were just on Foreplay. That was such a great interview. Oh, to like, wow, if I see them again, they would.
They know you.
Be like, hey, Fran. Like, and like that, literally as I'm like brushing my teeth, I'm like, wow, like imagine if there's another time that I see them that Joe's like, hey, Fran, what's up? And I like got flushed and I still have, like I said before, the inner fangirl where I'm freaking out. And I also think that's why a lot of our interviews are great because we normally really try and interview people that we have followed for a long time, have watched their stuff, really care about what they're doing. Because sometimes you listen to interviews and it's not these people's fault. Like it's on TV, it's their job. And you just don't have the time of day to watch every single thing that these people are doing. So sometimes when questions are like super produced and you know, you could tell that the person doesn't really maybe know or had watched a show or whatnot, that you don't really get as deep into the interview as you could potentially get. So that's why Rhea and I normally really try and do people that we're a fan of and that we can have those conversations with. And whether you think that's like a sucking up, I don't care. But it's just so much more interesting because if people are listening who are fans of that person, they're like, wow, I feel like I'm interviewing them because they're asking all the questions that I would ask.
And that's why I love it. Don't ever change. Is there a line, though, like a fine line? Obviously, when you guys hang out with the whole Bachelor community, I mean, is there a line between like, I've always thought this, once you are in the bubble of Hollywood or stardom, there's things people know, but you don't tell the press. You don't talk about it on the podcast. And like, obviously, I will not ask you to reveal it for me now, but I just would love to know, is there those things where you're like, oh, I know like Hannah B and so-and-so are for sure dating, but it is absolutely nothing no one's going to talk about.
Oh, yes. And that is just now the situation with becoming real life friends with a lot of these people, which is amazing because number one, so many of the Bachelor people are, you know, people freak out about them, but they are like your average person. Like, and that's not meant as an insult. It's meant as a compliment. Like they haven't let these things really get to go, you know, into their heads, inflate them. And they're so fun to hang out with and have a great time. Like, you know, Caitlin Bristow is someone that we absolutely love. And we've, you know, done each other's shows a bunch and have created this friendship. And she's fantastic and an amazing person. And, you know, there are for sure things now that we discuss that is just like not our place to publicly put out to the world. And it's the same thing with like Dylan and Tyler and Hannah. Like, we have gotten close with all of them. Like, we have a group chat, the five of us, that's like a ton of fun. But there are things that we talk about that are like we would never.
Right. Because
put out there because they trust us and we've created this friendship.
Yes, the trust is big. I mean, to have these people come on your show, they respect you and they trust you. And then the minute you violate the trust and you disrespect them, they don't want to do things with you. They don't want to do your interviews. So there has to be that line. It's just so interesting.
And it is. And it's tough because, you know, Tyler is like so sought after and everybody has their opinions. And anytime he's photographed with a girl, they're dating. And it's funny now because like Rhea and I are like, well, we have to talk about it. But like, there's been times where we have
like
talked about him and we're like, I think the first situation was like when Hannah B was with him in Florida and
for the quarantine thing.
Yes. Yes. And Rhea and I were like, look guys, I know you guys know that we're friends with him. We have not asked him what's going on because like, he's probably not going to tell us. And two, because we don't want to know, like we don't want that information because it's not our place to share that information. So it's funny because, you know, people were DMing us like, what's going on with Tyler? Like, what's going on? And we're like, We don't know. And if we do know, I'm really sorry, but we can't tell you.
Right. You have to maintain this. It's almost better if you don't know, because then you can just speculate like normal people. And if you
we just do our job like normally, going off e-news articles instead of like just asking him what's happening.
Yeah. It's almost more fun. It's like, I'll play this game and then he'll let me know later on.
Exactly.
The very last thing I just want to ask you, you put so much out there, you have conversations that people can listen to every single day. What is one thing that we don't know about you?
Oh boy. I mean, I have talked so much about all my like nerdy tendencies, which I feel like is the one thing that maybe people don't know about me. Love, like full nerd culture, Harry Potter, Star Wars, Marvel, all of that I'm a sucker for, absolutely adore. And then I will say, honestly, a lot of people don't really know that college story that I told you. So I was thinking that
when I asked that question, I was like, I think she already kind of gave that to me, but yes, I had it written down because I did not expect that answer.
No,
I'm
totally.
I'm so grateful to you. And I really appreciate you getting so vulnerable and honest. And I think so many people could relate to that and be like, oh my God, Fran, I love her. That makes me feel so good about me getting a therapist or something.
Yeah. And this is just, it's just the sometimes you save stories for the right platform. And obviously I have my own show, which is fantastic. And I love those things, but we have a pretty common theme with how we do our shows and what we put out there. And yes, there are times when we have gotten serious with my life or Rhea's life with, you know, more personal things that we have, but normally it doesn't go that way. So it's great when you can share these stories on a platform that's built for it. Like, you and your show are so great with just spreading love and advocating for mental health and body image and, you know, for women to love themselves. So it feels right to talk with you about these things. It does, because I think hopefully a lot of people who listen to your show have, you know, love hearing your advice and your journey. And so I am thankful to maybe share a little bit of mine, and hopefully it helps people too.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And that means so much to me. And the point of it was to obviously create a place where these conversations can be had in a way that's super casual and super relatable. And I think this is one of those pinch myself moments for me, is that someone like you sees that and the platform has trust in it. So
I'm having my brushed teeth, but Jonas Brothers moment, but instead it's Fran.
Well, I mean, it's really great. And I love what you do. I love what you do on social media, because not a lot of people do that. And it's the kind of accounts that girls should be following, because it just makes you feel better. Like, you're like, thank you for breaking up the constant perfectness of my Instagram feed. It's great.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And I feel the same with you and Rhea, and that's why I love your guys' show. And this was awesome. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And shout out Willie DeWitt. I know you're listening.
Yeah.
You set this up.
Yep.
And I hope you get to see your family soon. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed this just as much as I did, make sure you follow Chicks in the Office on Instagram if you're not already. They are so fun and entertaining. I love seeing it on my Instagram every single day. And you can also follow Fran personally at her Instagram account, which is at Francesca Mariano. Thank you guys so much. If you enjoyed this, don't forget to subscribe, review, leave a comment. I would love that. And you can also follow us on Instagram at RealPod. And I will see you guys in our next episode. But in honor of Fran, let's continue our week with that Friday energy.